Yeah, it totally flatlined, and then it's just sort of a, then it's like an identity crisis.
Well, you know, it's only an identity crisis if you create enough seriousness for there to be one.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't this being itself completely without effort or calorie burning? No one, I don't see anyone straining under the weight of the presence of proliferation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see Atlas straining, you know, with the universe or the earth on his shoulders, the cosmos on his shoulders. Here this is, right? I mean, it's kind of like cows grazing in a real wide pasture. And they don't look up from the grass and go, "Hey, Maxie, hey, what do you think this is about?" But we do, don't we?
Yeah. Well, so if sometimes it doesn't feel like cows grazing in the pasture effortlessly. It feels like, you know, when you're getting besieged by some sort of, like, story, right? But then when you realize you're in the story, maybe pulling back. I mean, it still feels like there has to be something done to sort of recognize the effortless, you know, feeling. The underlying.
It would like you to think so. But
so does that actually go away, though? I mean, like, it still feels like pulling back or shifting,
let's say the textural or the yogic discovery is to simply learn by observation what happens in your present experience when this is not about anything. Right? Instead of trying to leap ahead to know what it's supposed to feel like or what it may feel like, just find out right now what it feels like as you play with the invitation that this is not about anything. Right? Here's your laboratory.
Yeah.
It's all, and that's always the case.
But what you're saying is sort of, you know, has that sort of hypnotic pointing feeling to it, right?
Well, I would say that the texture of the, you know, what we call experience is hypnotic. It is seductive. It is engrossing. It is curious and strange and will self-identify on a dime and make believe as if there's an entire universe occurring when there's not.
Yeah.
It has you believe that you're the mind, that you're a body, that the proliferation of experience is external to you, that it's stable, that it's, you know, secular. But it's not. And you discover, or let's say you may discover, the texture of what this cares to show you the instant you entertain that it's not about anything. I mean, your next breath, that your organs are still functioning, that you even care about having a conversation like this, right? What holds your attention in your life, in your work, in your relationships? Everything is unfolding of its own accord. And it has never been, nor is it now, about anything. Right? So the mind can become, maybe not very happy, but perhaps just a little bit quiescent. Because if this isn't about anything, then everything that's appearing in the mind as a strategy, as a justification, as a seeking, as an assurance, is a confidence game. It's a shell game.
Well, to some extent, you know, it feels like like your words of saying that. Like if I tell myself like this doesn't mean anything, like it's helpful, but it isn't like a sort of pretend or act as this kind of thing that then facilitates it for real, or is it like a self-delusion, you know?
Yes, you have to jump in and use the handles at your command. Use whatever handles there are at your command to release yourself from the orientation of mind, right, as a reference tool.
Mm-hmm.
You must use whatever handles there are to relax from participating in mind as a reference tool.
So handles could be anything, though, and
absolutely.
It always seems like our discussions are about the most scaled down handle.
Yes, because the use of a handle is only going to be temporary and partial.
Mm.
So, therefore, it's good to use very, very subtle handles. Mm. Because they're not even made of anything, nor do they result in anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if this is not about anything at all, though doing itself either with profound chaos or cows grazing in a pasture, then the mind does not need to participate in the grandeur, in the mystery of what's actually occurring.
Yeah.
There's no need to place yourself as a disparate being in a place heading for a future with improved understanding. That's fucked up.
Yeah.
Because everyone wants to end up in a place, you know, with improved understanding. And that's the myth of enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that we approach that, the habit, is we idealize enlightenment and we try to use mind and reference to approximate it, to acquire it, when mind and reference is just the useless progeneration of myth itself. So it's like...
Yeah, it's hard not to idealize, that's for sure.
Absolutely, of course. I mean, yeah. What mind is the miracle of crystalline idealization from moment to moment to moment. And if we believe in the crystallization that the mind is capable of inferring, well, then we're in samsara, we're in becoming. If, however, what the mind does can be seen as elegantly disappearing mist without crystallization, then it's not that difficult to back off and see that this isn't about anything. But it's disturbing, there's no question. Because what do you do next, right? What do you believe in next? What do you make out of the next thing that occurs in your experience, right? What is it? Where did it come from? Oh, I know. I know where I am now, or I'm driving here, or I'm doing that, or I've got this going on in my mind. And you see, the mind is always kind of jumping in, right? Being utilized. Its presumption is, oh, I will be useful to you, master. And we keep throwing it biscuits. I promise I will be useful to you, master. And you're like, no.
A terrible servant and a terrible master.
Yes. There's no question. Yeah. That's right. Because all that can occur through the movement of mind and identification with mind is a referential hysteria. And referential hysteria is what seeking is, you know, addressing. One wants freedom from referential hysteria, and so we seek for something that we might refer to as enlightenment, but that's not the way home.
That would be a good name for a rock band, Referential Hysteria.
Yeah. Well, that's the human. The human lives in a myth of ongoing referential hysteria and creates continuities, cause and effects, and takes responsibility for the mind of God as a soul functioning agent. That's how crazy good mind is at fooling itself into being about something. It insists on your attention, you know, without fatigue, right? The mind insists on your attention without fatigue. And so we relent. We relent until we learn that we don't have to. We don't have to relent to the nagging seduction of mind, the attention seeking of mind. Wouldn't that be strange?
Yeah.
And what's the quickest doorway into that possibility is maybe the seeker's, you know, best question. Oh, you mean I don't have to suffer identification with mind or what it conjures? And the master might say, yes, you need not suffer identification with mind or what it conjures. Well, then tell me, Master, what's the fastest way there? What's the remedy, right? What's the stroke of genius? And, I mean, maybe this is glib, I don't know, but I would say, oh, the fastest way there is to see that this is not about anything. Or go to a cave for 30 years and, you know, duke it out.
Yeah.
Right? How bizarre. Now, we're not insisting on what this is or isn't, or painting another picture for some kind of idealized realization, which is a snow job. We're simply looking at the, you know, strangely simplest approach to the proliferation of present experience. Because present experience suggests a seeker with some kind of insecurity or some kind of motive to get to the bottom of this. And the seeker typically, thankfully, will come up empty-handed because there's no bottom to this. And the seeker himself or herself is a myth, is a misapprehension of the proliferation of experience.
It's weird because there's so much, you know, so many so-called technologies to do it, and if it's that simple, like, then why isn't it just that simple?
Well, the technologists, many of them, are happy to take your money so that they can sell you their personality, their method, their retreat, their DVDs, or their, you know, their YouTube channel, right? All of that kind of teaching, or much of that teaching, is celebrity driven.
Yeah.
And that's one reason why what I would say urgently available teaching is confused, partly because of the emphasis on celebrity or having a thing to sell. And the other you could say causative factor for there being so much confusion in technique is that very, very few are willing to have a conversation that transcends the human meme. You have to be willing to transcend the human meme rather than cater to it.
Mm.
And very few teachers in my experience, and I've seen a few and you've seen a few, right? Are willing to do that. They all speak within the confounding esoterica of the human meme, of the, you know, seduction of the divine feminine. They don't.
Yeah, it almost seems like, how come they're compelled to do it, you know? But I guess it's not to, you know, those who can't teach, I don't know.
Well, we're also looking at a very rapid kind of, I would say, maturing process in the, you know, perennial, the perennial wave, the perennial atmosphere of Socratic investigation and discovery, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we know that all of the ancients and cultures that we have the privilege of learning something about all had profound investigatory subcultures. And all of the, you know, founders of the world's major religions, which just happened to be a very few, I guess, big names in the business, all came out of investigatory subcultures. And so anything that we do today within the human meme is also a investigatory subculture, whether it's the Radiance Yoga of Radiant Presence or something as foolish as inquiry into awakening to infinity and beyond. So here you are. You're in it. You're in the soup of a subculture of profound investigation. And at least the way it appears to me lately, you know, this is the metaphor for the hour. Hey, this is not so bad. This isn't about anything. And then all of your superstition and all of your explanations and all of your seeking even is potentially flatlined. That was easy. Wow. I mean, I don't have to call this love, compassion. I don't have to believe in anything the Buddha said or Nirsagadatta said or Peter Brown says. I don't have to believe in anything that anyone on the YouTube channel tries to tell me what this is, because I know, you know, humorously and without a shadow of a doubt, that it's not about anything. So all those talking heads can just fuck off.
Yeah.
And that includes your talking head.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it includes all of the YouTube gurus that you may have visited and enjoyed, or the ones that you may still visit and enjoy. And it also includes you. It also includes the narrative pouring forth out of your own subjective nature.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to be able to enjoy folding my laundry in silence. You know, otherwise, what would that say? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, it can look like enjoying oneself sensorially, you know, from moment to moment in, call it, a miraculous and mundane affairs. But it doesn't have to look like that.
It can look like trying to fill up every empty space with some sort of...
Doesn't it? Doesn't the feminine divine, right? Doesn't the secular divine also reveal as insatiability? Right?
I guess so.
Well, life-threatening insatiability, species-annihilating insatiability. Any symptom that we see on this beloved earth, were there one, is going to be a symptom, yay and nay, of insatiability.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I just, you know, like all that training all the Buddhists do to be equanimous with pain, and that doesn't have its use, you don't think?
No, it's all myth because, you know, trying to be equanimous with the profundity of proliferation is taking the proliferation too seriously. As if it's wise for you to overcome, you know, the forces of nature within you. Like Patanjali would suggest that you become the master of your mind. It's like, who gives a fuck about my mind? It can just fuck off. You know, who gives a fuck about my suffering? I mean, you know, big deal. Oh, this really sucks. I mean, it really, really sucks. I mean, I'm confused. I'm out of my mind. I'm paranoid. I'm paralyzed. Oh, this tragedy is unbearable to me. And then I take my life. Yeah, so what was the big deal?
Well, they can't escape anyway, right? So it doesn't matter. You can kill yourself, but you're still going to wake up and...
Apparently so.
Yeah.
Well, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? So we're overcome with, you know, shame, blame, vulnerability when it comes to the survivability of our corporeal being or our personality. My art collection, my Archie comics, my music, you know, my parents, my parent partner, my offspring. This never stops. Convincing itself that the world would be worse off if you weren't here. We convince ourselves over and over again, or just how important it is that we remain.
Yeah.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah, I don't know where that comes from.
Well, I mean, look at the social conditioning and the social meme, right? Look at the profundity of movies and stories and art, philosophy, that, you know, the entire species has hoisted upon itself. I mean, Miracle on 34th Street, you know, or A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
Or Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Or, you know, Jesus on the Cross. Go on and on and on. I mean, the culture... The entirety of what we call the culture is full of profound sentimentalities, you know, heart-wrenching, mind-wrenching sentimentalities. And I don't mean to trivialize them as sentimentalities. They're just huge, huge archetypal influences that tell us, oh, we should live and thrive. You'd better live and thrive. Otherwise, you're going to disappoint someone. Well, disappoint who exactly? Who did I let down? Show me, who did I let down? If I fail miserably, you know, in the worst imaginable ways, either as the victim, you know, of a serial killer or as a serial killer, I mean, you know, humans do really, really wild shit, right?
Yeah.
We incarcerate and torture each other in the most creative ways that no one would ever want to be on the receiving end of. You know, we can just watch the Saw horror series, right? As an example of profound physical, mental, and experiential torture, completely over the top.
Yeah, I haven't seen them, but I've heard of them. Yeah,
me neither. I couldn't take it, you know. Yeah. And yet people, you know, flock to these films just to go into the absolute horror and sorrow of feeling vicariously these kinds of, you know, sick dead ends, which ends up in people losing their skulls, their brains, their eyes, being dismembered. You know what I mean? It's like the most sublime horror. And we love to watch this shit so we can have the vicarious experience of being basically torn apart.
Yeah, it's a modern day teenage rite of passage to watch these horror movies. It's like they can't kill a bear, so they have to go to the movies, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And so what is it? Well, we can't find anything that doesn't appear in the entirety of the myth of what we call experiencing. And most of it that we suffer from is really in a short bandwidth referred to as the human meme, right? The human cultural archetypal meme. And seekers want to micromanage the myth of the human archetypal meme.
Mm-hmm.
We want to get it right. We want to figure out what this is. We want to you know, live with a bend, and we think maybe more money would do it, or a different partner, or a new car, or, you know, if I gained or lost weight. And that's where we hang out. We're just completely upset with, you know, psyched up and consumed with the variability and the importance of what we refer to as the human meme, cultural meme. And it's just illusory.
Uh-huh.
It's just illusory. So
yeah, I mean, rock stars are rich and have all the money, sex, and whatever they, and they're miserable, you know. Sometimes they kill themselves, you know. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Poor Wayne Dyer is so crazy. He's recording himself, recording himself, recording himself. His narcissism has got so wild that he doesn't know what to do except replicate himself in multiple dimensions as if he's on the fucking holodeck. That's how sick he's become. But he was always that sick. It just took a while for it to bake off, you know? And that's the plight of the, you know, the clinical narcissist whose only relationship with living is to attempt to replicate themselves over and over and over again, hopefully being conduits of endless adulation. Yeah. That's because the narcissist has no humor. They have no empathy and they have no humor, so they can't see that this isn't about anything. There's no release for the narcissist in feeling that this isn't about anything. And that's why they're self-consuming. They self-immolate and self-annihilate. But they bring a whole bunch of people down with them often because they can be very, what's the word? Gregarious. Right? Influential. Yeah.
So the making too much about something or the non...
There you go. Wayne Dyer and all the other fuckers that, you know, make money by lying to people, make something out of something and then sell you the psychic remedy and point in their direction as the winner. Winning. I'm winning. You suck by my book. I'm winning, you suck by my DVD. Yeah, watch me win because I'm so narcissistically inclined. I replicate myself to make it appear as if I'm winning in the human cultural meme, that this is winnable, I'm winning, and you should buy my DVD series on how you can win too. That's what Landmark Education does. That's what Carolyn Meese does. You know, that's what Gangaji does. Right? And the guy that firewalks, you know, Anthony something. All of these motivational speakers do that. The only true motivational speaker turned out to be Chris Farley, who lived in a van down by the river.
Yeah.
You know, he was the true guru of all motivational speakers.
Yeah.
He did pratfalls and destroyed the entire set.
Yeah.
Now that's a motivational speaker I could pay money to see. But everyone else are insane. Because the human cultural meme is insane. Because it's arbitrary. It's a fractal. It's not even a fraction of what's going on here. It's less than that. And yet we make it into everything that's going on here, or all that's going on here, or the only thing that's going on here. And then we sign up for a lifelong of unabated neurosis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that difficult, really. We don't have to go through, you know, years of cushion or years of therapy or years of ayahuasca to go, hey, time out. Whoa, hold it. Hold everything. Well, fuck me. This isn't about anything. And I'm free.
Mm.
I'm just free. Now I don't need an intervention from anyone, including what I would say is my own mind, you know, my own opinions. How about fuck me? What good am I to myself?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question.
What good am I to myself?
What good have I ever been to myself? I'm no good at all. I mean, I can't show you one thing. I can't show you one thing that I worked out for me.
Mm.
Not a thing. Which is kind of strange because by nature we're all such egotists. We think that we've really worked this out. We're the shit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, wait, have I ever done anything useful for me? Nah. Not a one.
Not on any consistent basis, that's for sure.
That's right. Well, nothing I can show you now.
Yeah.
I can't show you any wins. I have no wins. I can't show you any, not one single win for the so-called 58 years of my imaginary life. Can I show you one win? If I'm here at all, I'm a total loser.
Yeah.
I've lost every battle, every decision. I've lost it all. I don't have a single win to show for anything. Boy, that's got to be refreshing.
Well, if there was any, it's thin air now, so.
Yeah. I mean, here this is again. Isn't it curious? You know, I mean, I know we have fun talking in circles as if there's mm-hmm. a question and a reply, but no, we're just kind of, we're more or less just killing time as absolute losers, seeing that this isn't about anything. And then if some other idea pops up that makes it appear that this is about something, we'll kick that around for a while until it becomes likewise moot.
Yeah, like, what if Night Sky Song is just some realm, just a realm or something, and
that's all it is. Yeah, it's just a realm. That's right. But all of your experience from moment to moment is just a realm.
Sure, yeah.
You see, that's what's so curious to see. I mean, that's what's so alarming and liberating is that all moments of experience are actually just a non-durable realm, a bardo mm-hmm. that lasts only for a moment, if it lasts at all, and that's in imagination itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow, it's a very strange, liquid, rubber, elastic, non-durable realm, you know, of endless mood. And reciprocity. Mm-hmm. But you can't really find what it is because it isn't anything. And by the time you even sniff out a mood, that mood is a million years old.
Mm-hmm.
How can something that's proliferating at present, that has no source or building blocks, discover anything about itself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you can't get behind the fire hose that is responsible for the presence of this proliferation to find anything out about it. You cannot step to the side of your present experience and say, oh, this is my present experience. Or if you do that, it appears that you do step to the side of your present experience and say something about it, it's not that difficult to see that you're lying.
Yeah. Well, you know how you say you can't predict your next thought, but sometimes it does seem like thoughts can be predicted. Like, if there's a song going through your head, I can predict that the song's going to want to finish, you know, or start up.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's nice to observe the song wants to finish is the same kind of, you could say, habit of perceptive closure that we impose upon present experience. Right, you know all those experiments that are done where you see only a few pieces of the number 5, but you create the number 5 in an instant.
Yeah.
So we are remarkably aggressive when it comes to imposing pattern recognition. And it's so fast we don't even see it. So we're living in liquid consciousness that can't actually step aside from itself to say anything meaningful about itself. Because it's not about anything. That's the fundamental revelation. Oh, you mean this is as crazy cool as it is, but it's still not about anything? You're like, yeah, that's it, man. It won't leave you alone. It's like a friendly, what are those wide-headed dogs like Francine has?
What does she have? Like a pit bull or something? What does she have? I forget.
Consciousness is like a friendly pit bull that's got its teeth around your ankles and won't let go. Mm-hmm. You know, a little growling from time to time. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
But here in your present experience, let's call it in this realm that we affectionately refer to as inquiry into awakening, it's just kind of lovely, strange, ordinary, slipping in, slipping away. Nothing can actually be said or known about it. So there's no seeking. There's no pressure for entering an idealized realm that one might refer to as self-realization. Yeah, it's kind of a back door. Think of it that way. Because the moment you start positing self-realization, especially in the ways that, let's say, Yogananda posited self-realization in Autobiography of a Yogi, right? Once you start getting into layers upon layers upon layers of physics defying magic, right, of experiences within the yogic realm that defy relativity. Well, then you've created a superstition matrix, which one hungrily tries to stalk, because that is got to be more real than my present experience as an absolute loser with nothing to show. You know, reincarnation and flying and turning into animals and prescience and predictions and turning alligators into banks. You know, anything is better than this.
And well, so it's weird. Yeah, I mean, I just have an iPad, you know, and to me it's like this magical thing. It's like the mirror in Snow White or something you talk to. Like, I can't believe there's this thing you carry around and you can... Like, I don't know, like, the world just seems bizarre in that way, too. You know, like, we have this magic. It's just kind of far out to think of computers and TVs and cars and everything anyway to me. But shape-shifting would totally be cool, too.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And any amount of magic you'd like to have, if magic is what's, you know, floating your boat, then... You can go to, you know, mystery schools, drug covens, satanic cults, Course in Miracles intensives, workshops with Peter Brown or whomever, and get as much miracle as you can stand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can actually get fucked up on miracle and end up in an institution or dead or alive and, you know, forever seeking one miracle after another, like a good sex addict is always looking for a more intensive trick.
Mm-hmm.
And, curiously, if you don't run out of money or sanity, you can keep it up.
Yeah.
You can go see John of God. And then you could go see, you know, Rupert Spira. Then you could go on a $20,000 Byron Katie turnaround house. You know? Then you could, you know, start a meth lab. The folks in South America would be happy for you to come down and participate in an ayahuasca, you know, extravaganza for a 30-day retreat, so you could see the beginning of time, the end of time, the no time, you know, see everything appear on a pinhead, all the lizards that control the portals to total consciousness. You can see white light, have a conversation with Krishnamurti, you know, or the saint of your longing.
Yeah.
And then you'll be back again at some point doing the laundry if you survive it.
You're saying that I don't know. There's a negative spin to that, I guess.
Well, if the aim is, and let me say this with all, you know, intended hubris and presumption and arrogance, if the aim is reality, you choose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that just gets in the way of it.
It's up to you. See, if there is no actual secular independently existing reality, then who's to say that walking on fire with Anthony Robbins isn't better than having anal sex with Thich Nhat Hanh? He didn't see that coming. Or worse.
Or worse.
Yeah. You know, it's like that joke, The Aristocrats, right?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Everyone was pissing and shitting on everyone else, and they were fisting donkeys and babies, and the priest, you know, the priest was doing, you know, foot fetish work with, you know, a rabbi eating pork, and you know, there was bodily fluids all over the windows. Right? That's the joke, right? The joke sets up like, hey, I've got this act. Tell me something about the act. And then the comedian goes into the most horrific, you know, hilarious, repugnant stories about sexual depravity imaginable. And then he says, what do you call it? And he says, oh, I call it The Aristocrats. And then that's the joke. So here we are. We're in it. You know, as playful and experimental as you give yourself permission to be, within the social construct, right? Within what's okay for you, physically, sensually, or otherwise, right? That's the bandwidth that you feel comfortable living in. I mean, some people do extreme sports like flying down heights, wearing squirrel suits with cameras. You know, they realize they're traveling at, I don't know, 300 miles an hour right into the side of a cliff, and they think the fucking squirrel suit is going to help them evade impact. Then they're great. They live until they die. They're not, those guys aren't even interested in sex. To them, sex is like, oh yeah, maybe, what the hell. I got a few minutes for sex, but tomorrow I'm going to fly like a squirrel.
Climb down Everest or something,
cocaine is good, food is good, sex is good, money. But you know, tomorrow I got my squirrel suit on, and I am gonna jump off a cliff so high with a parachute that you could all just suck my dick. But you know, but I don't see you suiting up, are you? Right?
No.
Yeah, no one on this call is suiting up to go, you know, leap off a 3,000-foot or, 10,000-foot cliff with a camera on your head. No, the best I can do is maybe stop at the Wawa for a donut. That's the degree of danger and risk I'm willing to take with my life. You know, I think I'll try the coconut donut today.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
Those are the best.
Really? Wait till I get home and tell Beth. Beth, I had the coconut dump. She's like, boy, you're taking some serious risks with your life, pal. Honey, I'm sorry. All I ever have to bring home is what a total loser I am. I thought I'd try something new.
Well, I've had the coconut donut conversation, but from Yum Yum Bakery. It's really, it is that kind of conversation to have when you have.
No, I'm with you. Yeah, no, Yum Yum raises the bar on risk for sure.
They put more apple lard in their donuts, you know?
Yeah, I mean, how much adventurism are you into? How about if you stay awake all night drinking scotch, and tomorrow go to the shooting range and see what you can do? Call in sick. Tell them, hey, listen, I was up all night drinking. I feel like hell, but I'm going to go out to the shooting range and see if I can knock off some targets. Cancel all my appointments, and if I do come to work tomorrow, I might take a dump on my desk. Oh my God, that woman is adventurous. She's taking big risks with her life. You know, what's stopping us from doing something kind of out of the ordinary? I mean, look what we've become. If the best thrill I can get is finding another guru on YouTube.
I know, it's really pathetic.
It is. I mean, lovingly so, but yeah, it's totally pathetic. Yes. That's what you're pathetic. You're beyond pathetic, and you're in the company of the uber pathetic, all of which are 100% losers. We're not going anywhere. We've never accomplished anything. We're not going to accomplish anything. No one cares about us, and it's good that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't even care about each other. This whole thing is just, you know, it's kind of a curious serendipitous myth. Because this isn't about anything. If you're interested in being enlightened, you know, there's a meeting down the hall.
Realm, I guess.
Yeah, where they take this so seriously that it's like, oh yeah, I want to be enlightened. I had an experience once. I had a real I had a cathartic experience once, like where everything was everything, you know, and like coconut donuts were flying out of the Buddha's asshole. and fuck, I want to have that experience again. I want it to
I'm
be
good. With I want the cup donut. Yeah.
I want to see the glorious light of, you know, Shiva and Vishnu and the gopis, you know?
Yeah.
I want to be able to mate with, you know, beautiful women that are many years dead. You know, wow. Yeah, no, that's a meeting. Let's go to that meeting. But what if this is not about anything, including the entire imagination of your life and how well you're living it, or how unimaginatively you're living it? What if you are a total loser and there's no hope for you ever? I would say you're at the top of the class. You know, there's nothing more saintly than a total loser that has nothing to show. And because then you realize, you know, you just can't possibly impress anything upon anybody, and so the pressure's off. you're the most relaxed yogi in the room because you realize that you're done. Yeah. This blows. Everyone else can seek to their heart's content, and they're more likely to be more successful than you anyway. Yeah. It's good. It's like go tortoise.
Is that like go fish?
Yeah, exactly. Go fish. Let all the rabbits run by as they line up to get darshan from Bentinho Massaro. And you can just sit back and go, I don't know what to do about this. This is fucked.
I heard something like he was charging $600 an hour or something on to Skype with people.
Why not? He was so confident in his ability to convey the, you know, the golden gem of enlightenment itself in a half hour's time. That why wouldn't someone save all of those years and all of those dollars by giving him $300 for a half hour long conversation to get to the bottom of the mystery of realization? I mean, my true hope is that, you know, he had 100,000 calls at $300 a call and that all of those 100,000 realized.
Yeah.
I hope that's true. I have my suspicions, however. You know, I have my suspicions that anything came of any of it, because nothing can come of this. Wouldn't that be fun? Oh, you mean nothing can come of this? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't care whether your next car is an Audi or a, you know, or a Scion. Nothing can come of this. Whether the species survives or doesn't survive. You know, whether this happens or that happens, nothing can actually become of this. So why invest, you know, even a moment in the notion of enlightenment. So that one can have a better, more enlivening experience of presence. I know Peter Brown sells it that way, and that's his privilege to do so. You know, I mean, that's one of the reasons I kind of baited him and said, hey, I want to ask you the same question, and I want you to answer it in two completely different ways. You know, is there realization? So where did he go with the bait? Well, I'll tell you where he went, because I was paying attention since I asked the question.
You know,
he insisted there was realization. The answer to the first, is there realization, was irrefutably yes.
Yeah.
And then when I said, well, to play devil's advocate, can we answer the same question and say irrefutably no? And if you notice, he balked. He did not say, yeah, oh yeah, is there realization? No, absolutely not. What could you possibly be talking about?
No,
Take that angle. He could have. I mean, he's elastic enough to do it. But at least in that moment, you know, under the spotlight of that question, he would not take the opposite view. Instead, he, you know, scuttled around it skillfully. You know, I love the guy. He scuttled around it by saying, it depends on how you feel about, you know, what do you mean by did Mona Lewinsky have sex with me and, you know, what do you mean? He pulled one of those, you know. It depends on what the definition of is. But I would say it's just as simple to say, is there realization? Well, you bet you're bippy, if we can go all Rowan and Martin on it. You bet you're bippy, but you can also say, what the fuck are you talking about? What would be the point of this even realizing itself? You see how strange it is the moment you idealize it.
Yeah.
And try to fuse it or try to participate in its apparent duality. Then you've made it about something. And I think that that's a slippery slope for everyone, and for sure the inquiring mind. It's a very slippery slope to make this about something and then want to sign up for the kind of self-realization that Peter Brown was hawking the other day, though for a relatively modest fee. And you can see it's just kind of style and stuff, right? Nothing is real. Nothing is real here, but there's nothing unreal here. So you can sell enlightenment by saying yes, definitely. Or you could play around with it by saying it's not possible and why even be interested. Right?
It's a sugar pill.
That's right. The present of prescient experience is a sugar pill. Proliferation itself of subjectivity is a sugar pill. And we want to take this subjectivity on the road to enlightenment, on the road to Dorlu. That's what we want to do. We want to take the miracle pressure, remarkable pressure and proliferation of subjective experience, and then make it enlightened. You're like, good luck. Good luck, because you're working with an ambient myth that has no duration. So I don't know if self-realization is possible of being this boring, then, you know, I don't know, maybe that makes it real, or maybe we missed the mark. Maybe we should try harder or come up with a better set of metaphors so that we can continue to urge ourselves forward into the beatitude of self-realization. I don't know, I might rather give Thich Nhat Hanh a reach around.
Now I can figure out the audio here.
I see you, yeah.
Yeah. Where am I? Here I am. Francine, I didn't know you were here. You're so quiet.
I'm muted because my computer makes weird noises and such.
You need a sound card, a new sound card.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But I'm happy you just listen.
Microphone is too close to the speakers.
No. The speakers are plugged into the computer, and they're pretty not super close. I don't think that's it. I don't know.
Oh.
I wouldn't know how to fix it anyway, so.
See, if I'd known all these people were on here, I probably wouldn't have been talking.
Oh, no, they were.
I was muted.
They were happy. They were happy for you to be the.
Yeah.
On the good ship, Lollipop. On the good ship, Lollipop. It's a. What is it? Quick trip to the candy shop. Nice trip to the candy shop.
Mm-hmm. Where bonbons play.
Okay.
Yeah, poor Bon Bon has, what does he have? Macular degeneration?
Bon Bon is a candy.
Oh, yeah, but Bono eats bonbons. Doesn't he?
Hmm.
Plus he just announced that he has, I think, some kind of eye disorder like glaucoma.
Oh, really?
Bono has glaucoma. Wow.
He should just put on a squirrel suit.
He should just don a squirrel suit and see if he can make it to the bottom with his fun, with his glasses. His bright orange glasses. Are you tired of being Bono? Can you stand eating another bonbon, Bono? You should just put on a squirrel suit.
Mm-hmm.
And join us for the Zero Altitude Club. We don't actually jump off of anything. We just walk around downtown in a squirrel suit.
Get out of the bag for money.
No, we put on squirrel suits, and then we put up Quaker placards saying, "War is not the answer." And the Night Sky Sangha likes to participate in some kind of social activism, so we wear squirrel suits and we say war is not the answer.
Sorry.
And then we go to somebody else's, designated area of the highway, and we pick up all the trash for them. This area, I mean, this section of Route 611 is maintained by the Baha'i. So we sneak out at night and we clean up the Baha'i's section of highway, and they don't know who did it. It's like the Night Sky Sangha stealth cleaning crew. That's all we can figure out what to do, because otherwise no one has any interest. But if someone's got like a new diet idea, we could talk about that for a while.
Don't eat.
Yeah. So any seeking, right? Any urgency for discovery is really a miraculously presiding, present expression of restlessness, a vector of discovery. Yeah. It's a way of saying, well, my present experience is somehow unpleasant or insufficient. It's certainly not enlightened. Look at me, I'm a loser. And I'm trying to figure out how it could be enlightened, and what book do I read next? What YouTube do I listen to next? What retreat do I participate in next so I can get to the bottom of this mirage and, be someone, have something to say. Yikes. Change the world. If freedom is an accoutrement of the imagination of humanness, it's useless. It's shit. freedom, if there is such a thing, I mean, to take it, you know, a little further, is freedom from any identification with the presence of subjective nature. It leaves human far, far, far behind. And yet you're still happy to go out and get a snack.
Lots of snacks.
Lots of snacks. Sangha. Hey, where do you go on Wednesday nights? Well, to the likes of lots of snacks, Sangha. Yeah, we don't meditate much, but boy, the eating's good. We've all agreed that mindfulness is just unnecessary. Because we've never been very good at it anyway. The only thing I could be mindful of is, what can I put in my mouth next? That's
good.
Why we call it lots of snacks, Sangha. Where no one's very good at being mindful, so feel free to take your fair share of snacks.
You dress up in a squirrel suit downtown and then just have a sign that says, what can I put?
Kiss me, I'm a squirrel.
See how that goes for you.
I don't, does any of this amount to something useful when it comes to self-realization? Have we steered this completely off the track?
I think so. It's the degenerate Sangha.
We gotta reel it back in. We gotta make sure that this is like some serious thing about the nature of consciousness. Master, I'm really interested in consciousness. Oh, that's terrible. That's terrible news. What's on your mind? Well, I'd really, really like to be enlightened. Oh, would you like a snack? Instead?
How about a cookie?
Would you like a snack instead of Kensho?
Any day.
Look, it's too difficult, it's too hard, it's too steep to get anywhere. So let's just snack on and chill out. How is that gonna relieve my suffering? Fuck if I know. Come on, how's that gonna relieve my suffering? Let me give it some thought. Not. By the way, after participating in your snack group for 3 years, I'm still suffering. So?
You had good snacks.
So what? Nobody said this was about an end to suffering. Oh my God! This can't possibly be enlightened because it's not anything. What do I do now? Well, I'll have another snack. But what do I do with all of my meditation accoutrements? I'll give them away. Bring them to the hall and then just leave them there. I'll meet you at Starbucks. We'll man up and have a pumpkin latte.
That's really manly.
Yeah, with 2%.
Soy milk.
And that's enlightenment. Meet you at Starbucks. We'll man up with a pumpkin latte, 2%. And that's it. You got a problem with that? What do you? You mean what? You want to be moral or something or compassionate? I don't know. Is that what you had in mind? Or do something about the Course in Miracles? Whoa. That which can't be heard did not fart in the first place. Isn't that like the beginning of the book?
That I don't know. I just saw the size of the book, and that was enough for me. I'm like,
really?
I think I just read Marianne Williamson back in the 80s for a second. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
The Texas Jew who's trying to run for Senate or something.
I thought she was someone else till recently. So.
She was till recently.
I got her confused with someone else.
And yeah, you found out who she really is. Or what anything is. I mean, where did the Crusades go? What happened? What was the outcome of the Crusades? The internet?
They got slaughtered.
What did they do? Yeah.
I think they brought salt back. I remember that from religion class.
Salt or salt?
Salt for meat. That's what I remember from second grade.
Oh, all right. So they were on a mission to get salt so that their meat would last longer. We called that the Crusades.
Salt and iPhone.
Yeah.
It's some research those nuns are doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really on it. Well, I don't know. You know, if you see this through the eyes of great masters that have come and gone, you'll drive yourself insane. You know, you'll end up listening to Rick Archer on Buddha at the Gas Pump, and then if you had any sense at all, you would just take cyanide.
Just sell cyanide? Do I have?
As soon as you hear Rick Archer come on, Buddha at the Gas Pump, you just like, oh, now I can take cyanide and I'll be done with this finally. I mean, what's anybody going to say? What are they going to do? Pump you up with love? Pump you up with compassion? Pump you up with belief? Pump you up with, you know, some kind of identification? Pump you up with a remedy? We are going to pump you up. You know, it's like Hans and Franz everywhere you go. We're going to pump you up.
Yeah, you get pumped up, I guess.
That's what happens, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe you're the governor of California if you're lucky.
Yeah. That's, I mean, everyone is all spouting all of this crap. We're going to pump you up. You're going to be enlightened and ligand. I'm a Wolverine for the truth. But it's all, you know, it's all crap. It's all frivolity. It's all entertainment.
Yeah.
I think that's, you have to, one has to bake off unreality with, you know, no heavy-handed hijinks. Just completely relax as a total loser. Bake off all unreality. And the seeking will end of its own accord. But you have to be, I don't know, strangely willing to just cope with whatever you find. From moment to moment, it's just kind of like cope with, be with, do nothing about whatever it is that you find. This way you don't impose any imagination or you don't impose any urgency on what we call the present moment. And that permits the present moment to be absolutely mutative, transmutative. So if I can catch a glimpse at the present moment is an inexplicable proliferation of transmutation, including the myth of my durable subjective nature, then, wow, I don't know, maybe I can find another curious, let's just call it curious place of rest. or curious place of remarkable indecision in the midst of a chaotic profundity. Wouldn't it be cool if I could be absolutely relaxed with ongoing indecision? I don't know what to do. I don't know what this is. I don't know what to prioritize. I don't know how to get enlightened. I'm not sure I even care. This strangeness presents itself unabated. But it's not holding back, it's not holding out for me to make a decision, to prioritize, to seek, to insist upon or assert any kind of certainty. It's not holding back, it's not abating, it's not waiting for me to promote a position. That's not that difficult to see. Wow. Someone says feel this. It's like, I'm not sure I know what that means, but whatever's going on, I can't stop. I can't amplify. I can't tune it down. I can certainly have a million ideas, any one of which I can insist is true. But absent all of that imagination, wow, I don't know what this is. And not knowing what it is, in a sense, gives you a get out of jail free card, where you're not bound by it, because you don't know what it is. Right? Once you imagine that this is something or about something and that you have an angle on what it might be, well then, you're in jail. The last thing you want to do is call it love. Gag me with a spoon.
How come Steve has the biggest square?
I think because he's like Paul Lind.
You have to make your screen all size squares.
I think you can, if you want to make yourself the biggest square, you can, you know, point and click or something.
No, I like being
the same size.
Yeah, we're the same size. We're like the backup. The backup singers to Steve.
Why is he? I don't know. He's not on mine.
mine neither.
Must have something to do with you, Suzanne.
Okay. I feel like mine should have a tag that says anonymous spiritual seeker, because I'm like in the shadows.
Nice. Why don't you do that for Halloween?
the unknown comic, but I'll be like the unknown spiritual seeker.
Yeah.
I'm going with F minus. Good one.
Remember worse the unknown
failing,
comic?
Worse than failing.
As we become maybe strangely comfortable with present experience as a kind of a disappearing act, and we relax from the insistence on making it about anything, And it's a, you know, it's a strange kind of relaxation. It's a strange kind of deviance from the archetypal, right, meme of what we call human. So a certain kind of deviance from conformity, from the way that the culture puts this together, is useful for the shaman. It's useful for the aspirant that's enjoying discovering what this really is. John Klein used to refer to this sensitivity as waiting without waiting. Just present to presently proliferating experience with, I don't know, the greatest of ease. He flies through the air with the greatest of ease. That's what we're doing. We're flying through the air with the greatest of ease. And that is absolutely transmutative. It's not a destination. It's not static.